This is Fresh Air. When my guest Tiana was a girl growing up in Saigon, she was given a Chatty Cathy doll by JFK. Tiana's father was the press liaison for the South Vietnamese government. He brought his family to the States in 1966 when Tiana was three. He was convinced that his government could not win the war. After moving back and forth for several years, the family settled here when Tiana was seven. When she was 16, she ran away from home and went to Hollywood, where she did everything from a karate video to an exploitation film and a few small roles in mainstream films. In 1988, against the wishes of her family, she returned to South Vietnam. Over the next 3 years, she made several trips back to make her documentary From Hollywood to Hanoi, which has just opened in New York. The film combines her personal story with the story of life in Vietnam today. I asked Tiana if she was aware of the anti-war movement when she was growing up in the States.
I was very, very aware of the anti-war movement because in the late 60s, going to school in Arlington, Virginia as a child, there was desegregation, there were a lot of political issues, and people were always saying, are you a Gook, are you a VC, what are you? I remember not wanting to be Vietnamese at all. It was a painful thing. We were watching the 6 o'clock news every night. So in the 70s, I remember wondering, why is this still going on? All the pain, all the suffering. When will I be able to go back to visit my country? And it was the Vietnam vets, Vets Against the War, Senator John Kerry, who headed Vets Against the War. I listened to them on the news. I went to Washington, D.C. when I was 14, and I joined this march for peace, which when my father found out, he was very, very upset, because under his rule, we went for marches for the war. We were in these moral rearmament shows and marches. Freedom isn't free. You got to fight for your liberty. So I was very torn even then, from the time I can remember, of being in marches against the war and in marches for peace. I think if you're for peace, you are against the war. But I was in marches for the war. And that was what caused a big breach between me and my father.
When you left Vietnam, your father told you that this was the last time you'd see your country. But as you grew older, you really wanted to get back. Why did you want to go back so badly?
It was the dreams, Terry. I have these reoccurring dreams. Five Vietnamese women come to me in my dreams, and someone pointed out to me that they're all incarcerated. There's a woman in a go-go cage who talks to me, and she tells me about her two Amerasian children and that she made $2,000 being a sexy dancer. Now, she didn't say a go-go dancer in my dreams. In Vietnam, 2 years ago, just talking to someone on the street who is selling cigarettes one at a time, because Vietnam is very poor, she said, I said, what did you used to do? And she said, in English, I was a sexy dancer. I said, you speak English? She said, yes, I have two Amerasian children I'd love for you to meet. And she started talking like the woman in my dreams. Like, I've been having these dreams since I was 6 years old. So I began to one by one meet the women in my dreams. And it was just absolutely amazing. But to answer your question, that's what drew me back, were my dreams of these voices from the other side, the people who either we left behind or chose not to come or couldn't get out.
What did your father think of you trying to return?
My father was very afraid for me. He thought I would be captured and thrown into the Hanoi Hilton. There are Vietnamese people today who think that it's wrong for me to have Hanoi in my title, and that if they go back, they might be captured. And I can only say, please come see the movie. From Hollywood to Hanoi is beyond just my personal story. It is also a chance for all of us immigrants, we all came from somewhere, to see that we could go back. You know, there is a chance. You can't turn your back on your heritage. That I found out.
When you decided to return to Vietnam, did you know you wanted to make a movie about that trip?
Absolutely not. I never, never dreamed in my life I'd be sitting here today talking to you and opening the film in New York City. I went back with Vietnam vets, including Oliver Stone, to look around, to see, for me, to smell the smells and to remember the poetry. I didn't even think I had relatives to visit. I thought we had all made it to America. We assumed anyone who didn't make it had died by the hands of the communists. In fact, I found my uncle, who was Minister of Defense for the South Vietnamese government, sitting in his home. the total lack of information and the isolation between America and Vietnam was what caused me to rush back home to Hollywood, where I was living. I sold everything I had, and I was back within 6 weeks.
My guest is Tiana, and she's just made a movie called From Hollywood to Hanoi, and it's about her return to Vietnam, where she grew up. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tiana, director of the new film From Hollywood to Hanoi. Did a lot of memories come back to you when you got to Vietnam?
Yes, yes. I stood outside the Carafel Hotel, and I remember when I was waiting for my dad when I was 6 years old to come out of a press conference, and there was a big explosion, and I thought it was in the hotel in front of me. It was in the hotel behind me, which was the Continental, which now is like a $200 on up a night hotel, very upmarket now in Saigon. No one calls it Ho Chi Minh City. It is Saigon. Even the Vietnamese government calls it Saigon. And there I was, and, you know, I thought my father was killed, and he came out from behind me, and he said, "Let's go home." And there were people, you know, just bloodied, dying everywhere. And these are the things that can never escape you.
You say that at the edge of Hanoi, your childhood fears came back. What were those fears?
Well, first of all, I'd never been to Hanoi. That was where those people spoke funny, had black teeth. They would eat us for breakfast. Certainly, if we were captured by Ho Chi Minh or his henchmen, they would tear us to pieces and cook us, you know. And of course, as an adult, I know that, you know, that can't be true. But still, as you're reaching, forbidden territory, these things come back to you and you try to shake it off, but you can't. And I thought that they would hate me. We bombed them for decades. So I was very, very afraid. And then one of the first things I saw was the funeral of a Catholic cardinal in Hanoi, and millions of people in the street mourning for him. And I thought, well, this is a different kind of communism. This is Hanoi, but there are 3 million Catholics. And I began to slowly unpeel the onion. And, you know, every layer makes you cry because there is so much to rediscover.
Do you think that your trips to Vietnam have inspired your father to consider returning himself for a visit?
I think that my father thinks all the time of going back one day. But as he explained to me and to a lot of audience members who've seen From Hollywood to Hanoi, because he has come and spoken with me at universities, and he said that, "I am trapped by my political beliefs. I cannot go back. I am afraid that they will use my trip back for political gains," they being the Vietnamese government, or, of course, his community in San Jose will ostracize him if he goes back to Vietnam. They are very anti-communist. So he is trapped in that respect. I, on the other hand, have never cared much what people think about what I do, because I find that when you try to please everybody, as I did as an actress, you don't get it anyway. And so I think if you go from the heart and you do what you believe in, people will come and support you, and that's what's happened with this film. So I and my father, it's really funny when the two of us speak because we're at both ends of the pole, I say that I am swayed by my artistic and humanitarian concerns, and he admits that he's swayed by his political concerns. And that is a generational gap that I think is very common in most families, because when he says political, when my father says he's trapped by political beliefs, he really means he's trapped by his stubbornness, that he has announced that he will never go back unless the communist government moves over or surrenders or whatever. And then how could he ever go back? I have told him many times that this will not happen, that the Vietnamese are so busy now. Giai tiền means running for money. They're so busy trying to make a buck and make ends meet and buy antibiotics and books for their children. They're not ready for a revolution. And because there is free trade now, and there are Vietnamese dollar millionaires in Hanoi and Saigon right now as we speak, there is very little chance of that. But there is every chance that we can influence them through our coming over. And I think, you know, once you've seen Paris, you don't want to go back to the farm, that sort of thing. I don't think the Vietnamese government can shut down the country now that they have opened up.
You learned martial arts from Bruce Lee when you were a teenager. Do you still practice?
I haven't been because I'm now distributing the film myself and I'm wearing 18 hats. But whenever I'm waiting for a subway, I do a couple of kicks and everybody sort of moves away. But I would very much love to get back into the martial arts. It's a great form of discipline. And I miss Bruce Lee very much.
Have you ever had to use the martial arts for self-protection?
I did once and I very, very regretted it. It's a very, very unpleasant thing when you have to be in combat to fight against somebody. In this case, it was a girl who was really hassling me.
What was she doing?
Well, this was a very, very horrible racist incident. You were taught, you know, to rise above this. But, you know, this was a very bad racist incident in which we were really taunted. And then she just started, you know, just kind of smacking me across the face. And I exercised Jeet Kune Do, the way of the intercepting fist. I smashed her face and it was just really bad. I had to deal with the police. And of course, I got off because she started it. But it's bad even if you don't start it. But hey, you know, when you have to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. And you learn in the form of martial arts to walk away from trouble.
You said that you were Bruce Lee's only female student. Was that because he didn't want to teach girls, or is that because you were the only female who was interested?
Bruce Lee was very, very chauvinistic. He felt that you should be with your father, your uncle, your brother when you're out late at night, so why would you need to defend yourself? And then he also believed that, that you know, a girl really can't beat up on a big guy, and he didn't want to mislead any students. I just convinced him that I would work hard, twice as hard, that I could be faster, stronger than most boys. And he finally said, yeah. He said, you were a boy in your other life. He said, I'll teach you. But I think he was just plain chauvinistic, and I say that with great fondness. He was a great man, a great teacher. He was very much into Zen and Sufi, and I still have his writings, and they mean a lot to me. Bruce Lee is not the Bruce Lee in the movies, you know, now that we've got the Hollywood version of it. He was not a god. He made mistakes. He was a human being. And I think that we should remember him as a great father and a great martial artist, and he was a great teacher.
Tiana's new film is called From Hollywood to Hanoi. She's also the founder of the Indochina Film Arts Foundation, which plans to establish a cultural exchange program in the Mekong Delta. This is Fresh Air.